In this episode, David Meerman Scott joins me to talk about his new book, Fanocracy, Turning Your Fans into Customers and Your Customers into Raving Fans.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery.
What is up? What is up? All right, we're over the holiday break right now. And, you know, I got to introduce you to David Meerman Scott. He's been on a bunch of episodes with us in the past, like episode 167, when we talked about how to get a ton of free publicity using newsjacking. Episode 167, the way you get access to that is wirebuzz.com/167. But David's back for more, and this time we're talking about fanocracy, and I've been calling this guru-dom is the way I look at it. But, you know, claiming your guru-dom. But where David is taking this is really interesting. Fandom isn't just for celebrities anymore. It's really the rocket fuel for any business or nonprofit that chooses to focus on inspiring and nurturing true fans. Now, as we go through this, I want you to think about all of the thought leaders or authors or speakers that you're a fan of. Hey, they may even be somebody that you just watch on a TV show, but you're a fan of them. So as we break this down, start to unpack this topic, we're going to talk to you about turning those fans that you already have that love you and turn them into raving customers. Sit back. Here's David Meerman Scott. All right, so I'm joined right now by David Meerman Scott. David is one of these rock stars in the digital space. The two of us happen to be doing some work for Tony Robbins, and I recently got to see David speak at a Tony event in Las Vegas, but the first time I saw David speak was at the National Speakers Association conference, and I'm a fan of newsjacking. Those of you may remember, David joined us on an earlier podcast episode, and we talked about newsjacking and how you use it for your business. But then when David got off the podium, I was like, oh yeah, I've been following that guy, but I didn't know he was going to be there. And then David sat down like four seats away from me, and I walked up and slipped him a note. It was like old school slipping a note, and David Meerman Scott joins me. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. I didn't realize that part of the backstory. I remember that you were so clever. You found a room,
yes,
in the hotel where NSA was that wasn't being used. And I bet if you had asked them if we could rent it, it would have probably cost $1,000.
Yes.
And meanwhile, we're like sitting in this like fabulous boardroom with cookies and soft drinks, and like you just slipped in and we did a podcast there. It was awesome.
So thank you.
You are a clever man.
I am in that regard. And the reason is when I created the first video medical encyclopedia on the internet, David, and had 8,000 interviews that I did over 4 years with the top doctors around the world, I never budgeted for studio space because I was so young and naive. I didn't know people did that.
Nice.
And so I did all of that work over 4 years just poaching boardrooms. And
right.
The key is looking on the board to see what rooms are used and then going to the ones that aren't on the board that day and then giving somebody $5 if they walk in, and it's cheaper than the $1,000 for the 2 hours for the room.
There
right?
you go. Awesome.
All right. So David, you've spotted some big trends over the years. You know, the new rules for marketing and PR, it generated 400,000 copies in multiple languages, including Albanian and Vietnamese. And now you're starting to see that this pendulum is swinging into something that's actually called, as you call it, fanocracy. And first of all, tell us what that is, and then let's break it down and get really nerdy.
Okay. We are going to geek out and do some nerdy stuff around neuroscience, I promise you.
Love it.
As it relates to video. But what I've found, you know, I've been talking and writing and speaking and geeking out about digital marketing for now 20 years. Like before even people even talked about it, I was talking about it. And I feel like there's so many people who are abusing the channel. They're doubling down. They're doing yet another tweet, yet another LinkedIn connection. And then when you connect with them on LinkedIn, they send you some sales message.
Right.
There's polarization. There is, you know, I I was on a social network recently. I was communicating, and it was a stupid robot. You know, I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on here? So I'm absolutely convinced that we've gone too far, many of us, in the direction of superficial online communications. And I think the pendulum needs to swing back to a genuine human connection. And as I was thinking about human connections, I was thinking about my fandoms, things I'm fans of. For example, my Wall of Fame over here is my Grateful Dead Wall of Fame. I'm a huge fan of the Grateful Dead. I've been to 75 concerts.
Mama's got some squeeze box. She wears them on her chest.
And what's interesting about the Grateful Dead and my fandom is that it's really about the people I share that fandom with. Like HubSpot CEO Brian Halligan and I have gone to 100, not just Grateful Dead, but other bands, 100 shows together. You know, my closest friends are the people that I share fandoms with. And then I talked with my daughter about this, Reiko. She's 26 now. She was 21 5 years ago. And she's like, yeah, I geek out about fandom too. And she's a massive Harry Potter nerd.
Sure.
She's not only read every book multiple times, seen every movie multiple times, went to Orlando to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, went to London to visit the studio, but she also did a 90,000-word alternative ending to the Harry Potter series where Draco Malfoy is a spy for the Order of the Phoenix, put it on a fan fiction site. It's been read thousands of times and commented on hundreds of times. So we co-wrote this book called Fanocracy together because on one hand, we both recognize, and then through researching with thousands of people, everyone's telling us there's superficial communications, but at the same time, we're all geeking about the things we're a fan of. And so this book is about how to build fans for any business.
Okay, I love this. And I'm going to take a slightly different approach, but I'm going to twist it back into what you're talking about. If you can figure out what your target customer is a fan of, you can be hyper relevant to them. And what I love about this is, David, you probably don't know this about me, but my listeners do. For years, I struggled with attention disorders. And I actually am now on the alumni advisory board for the nation's leading academic support program for students with attention disorders. And every semester I go down and I work with students that are a member of the SALT Center at the University of Arizona, and we work on their attention and how to be able to retain it when they're going through things that are boring. But as a marketer, if we can tap into their fandom, we can move them all the way through a customer journey, retain that attention, and then inspire them to take some type of an action. But you can't do that if you treat everybody as one size fits all types of marketing, but you can when you first hone in on what their fandom is.
That's exactly right. And it goes even farther because the idea of fandom is passion. And what we learned is that passion is infectious. And so the idea that I'm passionate about something, in my case, I love to surf, I love the Apollo Luna program, I love the Grateful Dead and live music, my daughter is into Harry Potter. You know, when you're passionate about something, you make a more interesting person. So following on what you just said, there's the other angle on it, which is that when you hire into your business passionate people, or you yourself share your passions with the world, people are naturally drawn to you and they want to do business with you because you're a more interesting person than just an automaton that only focuses on business. Yet there's so many people who say, oh, never show your real self on LinkedIn, and you know, don't talk about the things you love on social networks and whatnot, which is nonsense. From what we've learned, it's like, get out there and show what you're passionate about.
David, when you said that about not showing your real self on LinkedIn, I was like, really? Because today I posted the story of the perfect storm of how I almost lost the company a couple of years ago when too many things started piling up at one time. And you know, you've got to be vulnerable, you've got to be authentic, you've got to be engaging, but passion is that secret ingredient that if you can tap into it, not only will you be a better professional, and more interested. But from the flip side, you can use that passion as like rockets on your back to overachieve.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. And in speaking with hundreds of people on this, we've learned it to be absolutely right. And, you know, people ask me, what is with you writing this book with your daughter? What's that all about?
That's awesome.
And so here's why this was so important. You know, I'm a middle-aged white guy. I love the Grateful Dead. And that's just one type of person. My daughter Reiko, obviously different generation, obviously a different gender. She's mixed race. She's a neuroscientist, neuroscience degree from Columbia, which I am not. I'm a poet, not a scientist. And she has way different fandoms than me. So getting the approach of a millennial and what their fandoms are and how they react to passion was essential to making sure that these ideas resonated with everybody, you know, and not just middle-aged white guys who like the Grateful Dead like me.
Yep. Okay. So there's something interesting here. There's, by the way, if you guys want to listen to an earlier interview that David and I did, it's episode 167 of the Toddcast. You can get access to it at wirebuzz.com/167. Now let's talk about the neuroscience of fandom and the amazing influence of proximity. The things that I've recognized is the issues that I'm a fan of, or the celebrities or the bands or the artists or speakers, because you and I are both fans of speakers, when they post stuff and I'm in their tribe, there's something that's happening in my psychology that's taking place. Can we talk about that for a moment?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're spot on with that. What we did when we were researching is we wanted to look at what's going on in your brain when you become a fan of something. What's going on in your brain when you're focused on something that you love? And what we found, we spoke with a number of neuroscientists and did some research on this concept. And the first idea is that when you are a fan of something, when you're passionate about something, because you're doing that again and again and again, among your best friends are the people who do that passion, that same thing. You know, you are with like-minded people. When I'm at a Grateful Dead concert, I'm with like my tribe. I'm with like-minded people. So it turns out that due to our ancient brains as humans, we are hardwired. It's in our system. It's non-negotiable, hardwired in us, that we need to know when we meet another person, is this person a friend, a foe, or a potential mate? You can't deny this part of our humanity. And it turns out the closer you get to somebody, the more powerful the shared emotion, whether that's positive or negative. So what that means—
And when you say closer, do you mean proximity?
Physically closer.
Okay.
So let me give you the zones of influence as defined by Edward T. Halls, who's a neuroscientist. The first zone, further than 20 feet away from somebody else. You are conscious that there's people there, but it's not a powerful human emotion yet. Within 20 feet is called social zone. And within the social zone, our brains, it's hardwired, we can't help it, begin to track people. Yep. So if you walk into a room, you're unconsciously, as well as consciously, tracking every single person in that room. You want to know, are there people I know, or is there danger in here? And then the next zone, which is the most important in many ways for human emotion, is the personal zone. It's 1.5 to 4 feet. And so the closer you get to someone, the more powerful the shared emotions are. So for somebody that you enjoy the company of, someone who you know well, the people that you share the same passions with, the customers that you have that you've built relationships with, getting in their personal zone a foot and a half to 4 feet away is a very positive, powerful human emotion. If you get into a crowded elevator and you don't know the people in there, or a crowded subway train, you don't know the people, or you're walking down the street in a dark street in New York City and someone comes up close to you and you don't know them, that's a powerful negative emotion, because your brain is hardwired to be wary of someone you don't know who gets close to you. So we can use that in the ways that we build fans, because you can put yourself in close proximity with people that you want to develop fandom with and have a chance to, for example, invite them to your conference or invite them to lunch or at a conference that someone else has had, do what you did with me. Hey, David, let's get together. Let's shoot a video, which you did with me. We became friends and here we are talking again. So that all comes from neuroscience. Mm-hmm. And it's a fascinating concept around this idea of shared emotion related to proximity. But it goes further, and here's where the video component comes in.
Yep.
It goes further due to another neuroscience concept called mirror neurons. Mirror neurons are the part of our brain that fires when we see somebody else doing something, and our brain is firing as if it is ourself doing that activity. So, for example, if you're watching a movie and it's a scary movie, you become scared. That's your mirror neurons firing. Or if you see me take a sip of this lemon water, there's a bunch of lemon that's been squeezed in this water, and I take a sip. Oh my gosh, I feel that lemon instantly. My eyes, I can't help, my eyes close, my mouth puckers up. My saliva glands are working. That tartness, it attacks me. The lemon is so strong. You may have felt that lemon too, because of mirror neurons. Here's where it becomes interesting with video. So I mentioned the proximity. And when you get in close physical proximity with somebody, your brain fires as if you know that person personally, as if you're having a personal meeting with that individual. So for video, it's incredibly powerful to crop a video in the sort of crop that we've got right now, because it's as if you and I are in the same personal space. We're within a foot and a half to 4 feet of one another, where the most powerful human emotions are happening. So the mirror neurons in our brains are firing, yours and mine and the audience's right now, as if we are actually in physical proximity with one another. That's why we feel we know personally a movie star or a television presenter,
right?
Because our brains are firing as if we know them personally. This is very, very important for video nerds like us to understand, because if you're cropping too far away, right now, this is social zone, not personal zone, where I'm standing. You know, you can see half of my body. I'm pretty far away. If I hold my hands up, you're seeing both. Now, it's more personal space. Now it's more of a head and shoulders shot. Now it's as if you and I are in a cocktail party sharing a drink together and having a close conversation.
Right.
This is really important. And it goes to photographs too. The humble selfie, people make jokes about selfies. Those are incredibly powerful. Because a selfie, by definition, unless you're a basketball player, you know, your arm is 4 feet away when you take a selfie. And so therefore, by definition, a selfie is if I'm in your personal space. So it turns out that simple video cropping is essential to get right due to neuroscience. And this helps to build fans.
Okay, beautiful. I love it. Now, when you're talking about close proximity with your fans, this is virtual and through video or through your messaging or through images.
Yes.
And then we transfer that into inviting them to come to an event or to meet in person, which goes back to this whole Tony Robbins thing, which is proximity is power.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
And I also was thinking about Tony when you were talking about the different spaces that we allow. And there's something about the way Tony works the room. For those of you mm-hmm. that may have never seen Tony speak, it's actually unlike, it's unlike anything I've ever seen. It's on a whole nother personal level, because Tony will work the entire room. And if you're in a basketball stadium, he will go out to that back row. In fact, he will have 90% of the room turned around in their chair, but he's in that close proximity zone with everybody at some point while he's speaking. That's powerful.
Yes, it's powerful, and it's exactly what we were just talking about. And I had seen Tony, I've now presented about 15 different Tony Robbins events. I do all of the business mastery events around the world. And I had seen, and I've also attended the Unleash the Power Within and Date with Destiny events.
Boom. Sorry. You just say it, so, and I want to throw my fist in the air. Yes.
I know, right? Yeah. Stand up out of your chair and throw your foot in the air, right? I know, exactly. And I and like you, I'd always said, wow, Tony, this is powerful stuff, man. And so it wasn't until we started to dig into the geekiness of the neuroscience aspect that we just talked about where I understood exactly what was going on here. Not that Tony's doing it because of the neuroscience, but he's naturally doing it.
Yeah.
But number one, he's getting into close physical proximity with a few people in the audience. Number two, that is shown on video.
Yeah.
There's a huge video monitors, and they light the audience at Tony Robbins events, which is something very unusual. Most events, they light the stage and the audience is just under house lights. But at Tony Robbins events, the entire main floor of the audience is lit with television quality lighting. So, and there's video cameras that are filming the whole thing. If you want to see this in action, I recommend getting the Tony Robbins film that's called I Am Not Your Guru.
On Netflix.
And you'll see it, or go to a Tony, better yet, go to a Tony Robbins event live. So he's using the power of proximity because he'll get into people's physical personal space when he has an interaction with somebody in the audience. But then that's shown on video, and that's the mirror neurons effect, where everyone who's seeing that video feels through mirror neurons in their brain that they're having that conversation with Tony, even though it's someone else and they could be 100 yards away having that conversation with Tony. We all feel like we're having that conversation with Tony. And that's the power of video and the power of mirror neurons. And all of us can do the same thing. We can develop that power that Tony has developed in our own businesses by using video effectively.
It's so cool. Okay, so videos, like the way we replicate the real life experience of being one-on-one. It is the multiplying version of individual meetings. And when you, if I understand correctly, if you get in a little bit more personal with the camera, you're actually creating a deeper connection with those that are on the receiving end. And it's easier for them to develop a relationship that feels more intimate because you're inside that personal zone. Is that right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. It's exactly right. And it shouldn't be creepy. I mean, you don't want to, like, you know, do right. any of that stuff. But so many people I've seen film far away, like I'm doing now, or there's the sort of 60 minute style video where there's two over the shoulder cameras and the people aren't looking directly into the camera. That's not as powerful.
Yeah.
Because the 60-minute style over-the-shoulder shot where it looks like a conversation between two people, but you're not speaking to the camera, is not as powerful a way to build fans and connections.
And I think has a lot to do with eye contact. Like eye contact, if anybody who's ever been on a first date, if you didn't get eye contact, you're not getting a second date.
Yeah.
Right? And there's something about the, oh, by the way, David, I was not a very good eye contact person. I had attention issues. So I would make eye contact and then my brain would look off to a squirrel. And the next thing I know, I keep breaking the whatever I'm building between that person.
Yeah.
But as I started to do this Video Medical Encyclopedia from 2007 to 2010, I realized that as soon as I looked away from the person that I'm interviewing, they lost their confidence and they thought I wasn't interested.
Interesting. Yeah.
Right. So then I developed the opposite of an attention disorder because I strengthened the muscle. And then now I just, like right now, I'm just staring at a green light. I'm locked on to that green light.
Lock on. It's harder for me to talk to I have a white light. It's harder to talk to the white light than it is to put my eyes down and talk
to the
image of you. But this stuff is powerful. And what I love about this is that we've been able to actually learn these ideas around neuroscience and of fandom. And the other thing we learned, which is so interesting, is that, you know, a lot of people say, oh, fandom, that's for like athletes and sports stars and Tony Robbins and fandom's not for me.
Right.
But some of the coolest examples that we write about in our book, Fanocracy, are coming from B2B companies. We have an insurance company that has 700,000 followers on YouTube. They're called Hagerty Insurance.
Yeah.
They have a massive number of fans. An insurance company. Everybody hates insurance.
The most boring business in the entire world.
It's awful. There is not a single person on the planet who likes to buy insurance.
Yes, but I think if I remember Hagerty tapped into a subculture and then serviced the fans of that subculture. And before you knew it, they got absorbed into the culture.
That's exactly a great way of putting it. Yeah, it's classic car insurance, classic cars. And I own a classic car. I have a 1973 Land Rover Series 3, and Hagerty is my insurance company. And I love Hagerty. And when they send me a bill, I don't mind paying it because I love Hagerty. And I'm a fan, and I'm not going to leave them to go to the competitor because I love their stuff, and I love those people. And so I interviewed McKeel Hagerty, the CEO and owner of the company, and he said, David, insurance sucks. Everybody hates insurance. So I recognize that I can't sell insurance like everybody else. So I set out to build fans of my business, and I've succeeded, and that's my word of mouth growth engine. So what I love about building fans, and what I love about this stuff that we researched, is that it's not just for Tony Robbins and athletes and sports stars and musicians. It's for anybody. It's anyone listening in right now to this. It's for you as well, because anybody can grow business by growing fans.
Beautiful. Beautiful. All right. So I've got a couple more questions that I need to ask that I'm curious about while I've got your time.
You got it.
Why must companies let go of their creations in order to grow fans? Most companies grip onto things like they're holding onto a steering wheel or a horse reins. They hold on to it too tight. Why does that limit their ability to grow fans?
Well, so the whole idea of growing fans is that fans become in charge.
Okay.
So the more you allow people and encourage people and create environments for people to take ownership over the fandom, the more likely it is to spread. And one of my favorite examples of this is Microsoft. And people kind of think Microsoft fandom, but Microsoft has a partner channel, the Microsoft Worldwide Partner Channel, $95 billion in revenue, by far the biggest channel for Microsoft. And the partner network is completely controlled by the partners. They run the website, the partner website that people communicate on. They run the partner conference that they attend. And Microsoft is arm's length at that. And most companies are like, no, we're in charge. And when someone asks a question on the partner network, most companies would say, oh, we're going to answer because we're the boss, we're the company. But Microsoft backs off and lets partners answer the questions of partners. So letting go of your creations means once you've put your work, your art, your company, your idea, your product out into the marketplace, you need to let it go and let people make it what they want to make it. A final quick example of that, which is one of my favorites, is, you know, Roomba, vacuum
Sure.
cleaners. If you check out YouTube, there's all these fabulous videos of people's cats and dogs
Yeah.
hitching rides on Roombas. That's the idea of letting control,
Okay.
losing control,
Yeah.
because, you know, the Roombas should never, and some companies do this, no, you can't use our brand in that way. You have to take that video down. You know, they're like, cool, you know, cats
Right.
riding around on Roombas. That
It's
builds
Uber
fans.
for kitties. We all know that. All right, so there's
Uber for
something else
kitties.
here. There's a tie-in here with why you got to let your fans take these creations, and it ties back into the Grateful Dead. Now, you know, I've been a passive listener. When their music comes on, I tap my foot and my head nods, and I know all the words because they're great storytellers. But the Grateful Dead also follows this approach, and they allow their attendees to bring instruments and play with them at the concerts. And at least from my understanding, and the other thing is, back in the day when everybody else was like, you can't record, these recordings all belong to us, and they search through our bags and pull out tape recorders. Now we all have recorders with us everywhere we go. But the Dead allowed you to make your own recordings. Do both of those fit into the theory of allowing your fans to take your creations?
So they don't actually, there's no real focus on people bringing instruments except for before the shows start. There's a lot of that going on. But the recording concerts is huge. The Grateful Dead, unlike every other band on the ticket, every other band that says no recording allowed, Grateful Dead said, sure, why not, starting 40 years ago. And originally it was cassette tapes people were making, and now, of course, MP3 files. But the Grateful Dead said, sure, why not? Please record our shows. And that is part of letting go, but it's also part of another concept we learned of fandom. It's actually another chapter in this book, is give more than you have to. And so the concept around give more than you have to is, the Grateful Dead don't have to let fans record their concerts, but they do. And then those initially cassette tapes, later MP3 files, spread everywhere. And people then got exposed to the music of the Grateful Dead through the sharing of those files.
Faster than they ever would have if they listened to the radio every day.
Exactly
Yeah.
right. That's exactly right. And here's a manifestation for all businesses, especially B2B companies, is a lot of companies put their white papers out there with a gate on it. You know, you can only get my white paper if you give me your email address first. That's the wrong approach if you want to build fans. That approach sets up an adversarial relationship with your customers, which is not conducive to building fans. The right approach is to take the Grateful Dead approach, which is to give more than you have to make that white paper completely and totally and utterly free. That builds more people who know your stuff. That builds more fans. And that's much more likely to get you over time way more customers than if you just put a gate on your content and try to collect their email address and then try to beat them up until they buy something.
Wow. What a fun, strange trip this was. Who knew we were going to cover that much territory in this conversation? He's David Meerman Scott. David, where do people find out about Fanocracy and find out more about you?
So the URL, fanocracy.com, you can check that out. We chose the name of the book, like the word democracy is the rule of the many. Mm-hmm. Fanocracy is the rule of the fans. So fanocracy.com. I'm DM Scott, DMSCOTT on the socials. And those are two great ways to connect.
Beautiful, man. Always fun. You always bring in
Thank
really
you.
Interesting things to my brain and to my audiences. If you want to see the interview that I did with David in Where Were We, Dallas, go to wirebuzz.com/167 to get a hold of that episode. And what we're talking about there is not Fanocracy. We're talking about how to get a ton of free publicity using Newsjacking, which is another one of David Merriman Scott's creations. David, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, it's great. I love it. We'll have to figure out the next time to do this in physical proximity rather than virtual proximity.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you soon. It was so funny because I hit up David. We were both going to be at the same event. And I was like, hey, let's catch up. I'd love to talk with you. And then we both got swept up in the event and we were nothing more than passing waivers
at different times.
So great seeing you, man.
All right, great. Thanks. Take care.
Hey, thanks so much. Take care. We'll talk to you soon. He's David Merriman Scott joining us on the Toddcast. All right, that was a fun interview. For more information, you can always go to fanocracy.com. I'm going to spell it for you because if you're anything like me, you're probably wondering how in the world, FANOCRACY. Fanocracy.com is where you can get more information. I would highly recommend you purchase his book. Every one of David's books are loaded with information that's going to make you a better marketer, a better guru to your audience, and to grow either. If you're doing this for clients, you want to help them grow their fanocracy. Start by getting a hold of David's book. Go to fanocracy.com, amazon.com, wherever you get books nowadays. Nobody really knows, but that's where I would recommend you get started. Anyway, if you're looking to figure out what are the topics that are relevant for your business, you know, the ones that are going to help you drive revenue to grow your business at freakish rates in the new year, I highly recommend downloading our topic selection worksheet that we created. You can get access to it at wirebuzz.com/topics. And we will walk you through the steps. It is a worksheet. So roll up your sleeves and expect to do some work. And by the end of that, you'll know what topics are relevant for your business. wirebuzz.com/topics. And if you want to figure out how to guarantee your videos generate a return on investment, right? That's what all the big boys are doing. Videos are great. They're an investment. How do we turn that investment into revenue? Well, we created a 5-part web-based mini course featuring yours truly, a couple extra pounds on him back then, going through my secrets and teaching you how to guarantee that your video projects generate ROI. And where do you get it? Wirebuzz.com/ROI, just like return on investment. Wirebuzz.com/ROI. And I will continue to do my part. I had a really great week of just laying down all of the things, the areas that I need to optimize. I'm going to be teaching that back to you because I teach what I need to learn. And the things that I've got in place right now for my own growth and development are things that will help accelerate your growth and development. There's no reason why I shouldn't be sharing that to you. So up in the next episode, we're going to be talking with, oh, I love this, Kendra Hall. Kendra Hall is a keynote speaker like David and myself. We're all on the tour. I interact with them. I get to learn from them as they do their thing too and go out and teach around the world. And Kendra Hall is going to talk about stories for your business and how those stories are used in a business context. And for those of you that have been following, you're going to notice that Kendra's information is complementary to what I've been teaching you. And she comes at it from a completely different level and a different angle that I think will put some really nice context into place about what I've been teaching and how you can use that to accelerate your business growth. On behalf of everybody here at Wirebuzz, we wish you continued prosperity. This new year is going to blow your mind, so make sure you get yourself focused on your goals and start blowing those goals out of the water, because where our focus goes, our energy flows, Tony Robbins teaches, and just start really being conscious of it. Don't do everything, just do the right things, and before you know it, you'll start receiving amazing results, growing your fanocracy in your business and ultimately your revenue, and that's the whole goal. All right, peace out, everybody. Peace.